What up, ladies and gentlemen? The Ring Podcast with Ranger Proud, a new slate of episodes. The second installment between April and June for all of our episodes here on the Bleed Blue Show, the Ring Podcast with Ranger Proud. RP, what's up? What's going on, man? It's been a while since we talked, man. And how's everything, bro?
Everything's been good. It's been a little hectic. I couldn't do those Monday shows, and then we had some personal family crap going on. But I've been following the Rangers as always, and doing my thing and get you back on talking with everybody.
Yeah, and I apologize for that, man. And that was the only way, because I had a lot of travel dates around that time. And the only way to not cancel the shows but still get episodes out there and so we could have something to discuss was to move it to Mondays when we were 100% free. We had no show. The baseball are kind of on the Sundays right now. So the Mondays are available, and it was a good way to not cancel the shows entirely, but move it temporarily to Monday. And thank you for you guys for your patience, man. Hey, Glenn, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good, Steve. Good to be back with you. Just talk a little hockey. Rangers clinched the playoffs, and we'll talk about what's been going on since then, which is a little curious.
Oh, yeah, and I got a great question for everybody, and especially for you tonight, Glenn. I can't wait to hear your guys' thoughts on that Rangers-related. The hint is Jonathan Quick. That's the hint, Jonathan Quick. Shout out to everybody. Scott, what's going on, man? How are you? And, you know, everything was going on with yourself, bro. You got to be happy with how the Blue Jays are playing, except for last night.
Oh, yeah. Oh, life is good, man. Life is good. Yeah. First of all, like I said yesterday, or like I said a few minutes ago, I'm just one Purdue just needs to win their semis, and I win my bracket pool, so that's good, regardless of everything else that happens from here on out. So, but not to get off topic, yeah, life is good with the Rangers. But we can get the obvious out of the way. Last night was terrible. That was a stinker. But yeah, at the rate they're putting up stinkers, I don't care. Like, you know, they're coming off a 5-game win streak. Right before that, a 3-gamer, and right before that, a 10-gamer. I mean, they're allowed to have a stinker every now and then. It just stinks because, you know, we're fighting tooth and nail to hold off Carolina and hold off Boston or Florida for the conference. So we want to win every game, and we finally had a little bit of a breath. I don't even want to say breathing room. We'll call it a breath between us and Carolina. But of course, every loss, you know, with the way they're playing, that's going to come down to the wire. So,
okay,
they're allowed to have a stinker.
Cool. We'll get into that, man. Carl, what's up, man? How you doing, man?
There we go. Good evening, gentlemen. It has been a long time. We're counting down the days until April the 20th, but we've got some business here, these next 8 games here to finish up first.
Yeah, we do. We definitely do. We have some milestones in the last couple of weeks with Chris Kreider and his milestone goal achievement, Jonathan Quick becoming the all-time winning goalie in American history, you know, from an American national perspective. But RP, like Scott alluded to, of course, we're all willing to forgive. The Rangers have been having a great season. They've especially the win in Colorado. So I could live with a Pittsburgh loss, who really needs it more than we needed a win. I mean, we need wins to keep Carolina off our tail, but Pittsburgh is fighting for their survival. So, and they're a shell of themselves, but they, you know, stinkers do happen, like Scott said. But RP, let's talk about it, man. Let's get everybody's thoughts. What are your thoughts on the Blue Shirts? We'll just start off softball level with that, and then we'll get into some more great questions with the Blue Shirts and around the rest of the NHL. I got you guys for the next 50-something minutes.
Nah, look, they're playing good hockey. I thought the Arizona game was going to be the trap game, you know, going there, only 5,000-seat arena. Thought it was a ton of Ranger fans. To me, that was the definition of what could have been a trap game. And even though they had to come back, it was a good win and all. We were a discussion. You're not going to win every game. They beat themselves last night, though. Let's be a little clear about it. Pittsburgh didn't beat the Rangers. Like, a lot of mistakes. Trouba is still looking to find his game. And that's what these last 7 games are going to be about. Laviolette making sure he's happy with his line combinations. What does he want to – what kind of team does he want to be going into the playoffs? This is all prep for the playoffs, these 7 games, 8 games, whatever it is. And as I wrote yesterday, I don't know if anybody saw it. I haven't been writing a lot because things are going on, but – yesterday I wrote how I would not be disappointed if we did not win the President's Trophy. As you guys know, I'm that superstitious jinx kind of guy. Only 8 teams have won the President's Cup and the Stanley Cup in the same playoff year. So if we don't win the overall, I'm okay with it. If we win the overall, best, I'm okay with it. But I don't think that needs to be the emphasis. The emphasis is how do we get to be the first team to get 16 wins once April 20th starts. And that's all they should be looking at. Don't get hurt. Try to stay healthy. Just so it can keep staying sharp. And just put the little final pieces together. And I think that's what Laviolette, he's been calling the entire regular season preparation for the playoffs. And he should just continue that mentality with the coaching staff and with the players and just get to April 20th. Let's start the playoffs hot. You know, they're one of the hottest teams in the league. You're going to have your ups and downs. I don't think anyone should be discouraged, disappointed, and stay off Twitter because after last night's loss, you would have thought, I'm just confused by fans at times. The mentality that you have to win every single game, and when you lose, sometimes the obvious reason is the reason. The Rangers beat themselves last night. They played poor defensive coverage early on. Schreiber and Laviolette even made a mistake and corrected it because Schreiber and K'Andre Miller were not the pair to go against Rust and Crosby. And after about halfway through the first period, he recognized that. So, you know, mistakes going to be made. I want to see the adjustments after the mistakes are made. Because we went through a playoff last year when Gallant made no adjustments against the Devils at all, and we lost. So I want to see our team adapt to what other teams are doing so that they can continue to be better. And I'm confident that he's going to carry that straight through into the playoffs.
Right on, right on. Let's go to Glenn and get his thoughts, and then Scott, and then Carl. Hey Glenn, what are your thoughts, man, as far as with the Blue Shirts over the last 3 weeks or so?
Well, let me emphasize first that I'm not worried about this team. But I don't like that they're giving up more goals lately. I mean, 5 against Philly, 5 against Arizona. There's been some sloppy play in the defensive zone, giveaways, too many odd man rushes to my liking. I'm not worried about this team, but, you know, they played great against the Colorados and, you know, some of the other good even though they lost to Florida, that was a great game. They played well against the good teams. I look at the schedule down the stretch. The only team they have to play in the last 8 games that's in the playoffs is Philly. So you're looking at a lot of inferior competition down the stretch. And I don't want them to, you know, kind of take it easy against some of these teams. Because even though, you know, a team like Pittsburgh, the Islanders, if you won't even say the Devils, maybe still have a shot to pick off one of those last playoff berths because nobody seems to want it. You know, the Rangers are in a race themselves, not for the President's Trophy. I'm with RP. I don't care about that. Let Dallas win it. Let, you know, one of the other teams out west win it. But I want to come in first in this conference because I'll tell you what, guys, right now, the last team I want to face is Tampa. And, you know, if Carolina catches the Rangers, I still feel kind of like it's going to be a little bit of a downer after being in first place the entire season to have it come down to the last week and come in second. But, you know, like Scott had pointed out a couple of weeks ago, it'll probably make for an easier first round. But right now, I want to come in first in the conference because I really don't want to play Tampa. I don't like the way they're playing. I don't like the way they're playing for us to play it, if I should say. I don't know if it's post-playoff traumatic syndrome with them and us for the last few years, but I don't want to play Tampa right now. So I think it's important for them to come in first in the conference. Again, I'm not worried about this team. I feel they're very professional. They know what they have to do. They'll pull it together when they have to. But I don't want to see them cruise these last couple of weeks against inferior competition and lose that edge because some of these games that they've been in, I kind of felt like they lost it. I mean, last night they had no edge at all. There was no energy. There was nothing. But some of the other games, the Philly game, I think Laviolette said it best. It's like, you know, they get down, they get mad. So they play for like 10 minutes, score a couple of goals, take the lead, and then they're like, okay, we're good. And then they, you know, play a little lackadaisical. They get down again, then they get mad, and then they score a couple more goals and go ahead. I don't want to see this, you know, switching it on, switching off. It's just the inconsistency bothers me. And again, I'll emphasize, I'm not worried about this team going into the playoffs, but the inconsistency is kind of turning me off a little bit from what I've seen in these last few games.
Fair enough. Thank you, Glenn. Let's go to Scott and get his thoughts.
Yeah, I agree there. I'm not worried about the defense. I know that the defense the last couple games was not great, but I mean, look, we played without Lindgren, without Trouba, you know, and that screws up two of the, you know, the top two pairs. Both have to have new line mates there, you know, new pair mates, whatever the term would be there. And they actually did pretty well, all things considered. Zach Jones really stepped up. Definite shout out to Zach Jones. He really stepped up and held his own and held things together there. But it was only a matter of time before they, you know, they had a few defensive lapses. And, you know, the Philly game, the Arizona game, okay, they did come out with 2 points in both of those. But, it was only a matter of time before the defense, you know, was exposed. Now we got those guys back. Obviously, Trouba needs more practice with maybe another game to find his game. He did not look good the last two, but he's had a very good season. He's, you know, been noticeably improved this year. So hopefully he can get back to that. And as far as the seating goes, yeah, I think I've changed my tune on what I said a few weeks ago about not wanting the division lead. For one, I want to win the conference, but not the President's Trophy. And not because I don't believe in this curse nonsense. I've actually seen a stat. I don't know the numbers offhand, but the President's Trophy winner actually has a higher percentage of winning the Stanley Cup than any other seed. So that whole curse thing is nonsense. And let's not forget the Rangers won it in 94 with the President's Trophy. So it's not the curse, but what the President's Trophy does do is it puts a bullseye on you because now all of a sudden you're in the media spotlight as the best team in the league, and now, you know, everybody wants to see you fall, let alone, you know, our local opposing fans, you know, our Islanders and Devils and Flyers and all those fans that we have to deal with. But the rest of the league wants to see you fall because they want to see the President's Trophy winner go down. So I don't want the President's Trophy for that, but I do want one. I would do want number one in the conference. And that, because that means, yes, I totally agree with you, Glenn. I want nothing to do with Tampa. You know, not only because, you know, 2015, 2 years ago, you know, they still have the solid core of three straight finals and two Stanley Cups. And they got better. They got significantly better at the deadline with the additions of, Duclair, and I forgot who else they picked up. You know, they're well above what they were before the deadline, and they definitely, you know, don't be fooled by where they are in the standings. They may or may not catch Toronto for the three seed in the division, but they are absolutely, I consider them a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. So I, you know, let alone the history we have with them, I do not want to play them in the first round. So I'd like to play that lower wild card. And then, you know, I've said it a million times when it comes down, you know, if it comes down to Carolina in the second round, I absolutely want home ice for that. And again, like we've talked about, it's not about the crowd noise because we're going to put decent heads in that building. It's about, you know, that series 2 years ago. Those games in Carolina were night and day from what they were at MSG. So I definitely want that series starting at MSG. So, I forgot who else. I think Glenn, you also said that it would be considered kind of a letdown to be, you know, almost wire to wire and first and lose it at the end. It, you know, might hang on them. Who knows? But, you know, you want these guys, after what happened last year, you want these guys to go in with as little hanging over their heads, you know, other than that series last year about retribution. You know, you don't want an added weight of, you know, having gone wire to wire almost and then, you know, slipping out of first place at the very end. So you don't want that added. So
There's a bunch of reasons why I definitely want first place, but I also want to hold off Florida and Boston for the conference. So, yeah, I guess you know if there's anything else to say about last night. I guess that was the trap game again. You know, like RP said, we thought it was going to be Arizona, and it almost was. You know, the Rangers weren't you know, were kind of sloppy in that one too. But you know, again, the way they've been playing, they're allowed to put up a stinker. You know, it's very rare that we're talking about a stinker. Even most of the games this year that they got beaten, you know, were good solid matchups in which you know they just got beaten. You know, last night. They were just sloppy all around. Defense was terrible. The offense, I know they had 30 shots. And, you know, Steve, I'll take, you know, one of your quotes where you said, you know, this advantage in shots on goal doesn't necessarily mean you were the better team. And last night was a perfect example. The Rangers had the shot advantage 30-20. And, you know, there was no sustained offense. There was, you know, with the exception of maybe the last 5 minutes there where they got those two goals, there was no sustained pressure. Just, you know, a good 30, 45 seconds in the offensive zone. They just didn't have that last night. You know, the shots were few and far between, and I don't even know how they came up with 30, to be honest with you. I don't remember 30 shots. So, you know, just all around bad game. But, you know, again, after a 5-game win streak, 3-game win streak, 10-game win streak, they're allowed to have that. And they've rebounded. They rebounded well after a loss all year. And, you know, and these teams, it's funny because these teams.
Scott, you got to land that plane, bro. Land that plane.
You're going to play me off? You're going to give the Oscar music? Okay, moving on.
Yeah, we go. We got to get other time, man. Yeah, Carl, what's up, man? What are your thoughts? And we'll get back to you, Scott, on that. Carl, what are your thoughts, man? How you looking at things?
Well, things have been going good these last few weeks for the Rangers. You know, what we have seen, and I think a lot of folks would agree, is, you know, with the guys that have been out, with the key guys been out, whether it be Lindgren being out, Trouba had been out for a while, the depth of the roster, which, you know, probably at the beginning of the year, you know, you had questions about, you know, whether or not certain, you know, whether or not you'd have guys be able to come in and basically at, you know, minimal cost be able to provide you with some level of stability if a guy were to go down. You know, we've seen around the league is that when, you know, because of the way the cap situation is set up, where if you came into the season with problems, you're probably at game 75 still with those same problems. But what the Rangers have been able to do, have been able to use the depth of the minors to be able to supplement what's been going on the ice and not have a drop off, you know, that would be somewhat that would be mostly noticeable, where you could say, damn, we just got to wait for these guys to get back. That was when I saw that Lindgren was coming back. I think it was the Saturday game. I missed the Saturday game. But when I heard he was coming back from that, I was like, damn, you know, you probably could just hold him out for like another like 10 games, but you know, you can't keep that dude out of the lineup. I mean, whenever he's ready to come back, he's just ready to go. And so, hey, listen, you know, so we've been able to sort of withstand most of that. And, you know, we've got this last 7-game stretch here. I've been just checking in my numbers because, you know, the guys were just discussing whether or not, you know, you want to win the President's Trophy or, you know, the value in that. And essentially, as I was looking at it, between the way this sort of sets up, if the Rangers simply win 5 more games in regulation, or yes, you could take it overtime as well, they're probably going to win it regardless. That's just kind of the way this sort of breaks down. They're going to win the conference as it is, unless Carolina or Boston, who have 101 points, basically, if the Rangers win 5 games and get 2 points out of those 5 games, the other two teams have to win every game to pass them. That's not going to happen. So if they just win their games, that's going to kind of take care of itself, and then you just sort of figure it out from there. Now, whether or not Dallas overtakes them in the Western Conference, you know, who knows about that? But you know, listen, you can only control what you can control. But I would love to set up a situation where the last, I would say two, I think we talked about this when we went off for break. I would like to set up a situation where the last 2 games of the season can be essentially maintenance games. I would prefer that. Now, if that doesn't happen, that was scenario A. If scenario B comes into play, where we said before we left, hey, you know, if Carolina goes on some crazy run to catch the Rangers, you just sort of shake, you know, tip your cap to them. And since in the last 25 games, look at here, they're 19-5-1. They're basically playing at the same pace that the Rangers have been playing. So if Carolina overtakes them, I can't say it's a disappointment, because if you play 80%, you know what? Hey, there's nothing you could do. Now, the consolation in that, if that were to happen, would be, as it looks like right now, it's either going to be, you know, Philadelphia or Washington in the first round of the playoffs. Now, you may get that anyway if you finish first, but either way, I think, you know, if you just sort of just play the rest of the season out, let it happen, and then take your chances when the when April the 20th comes around. You know, just in terms of some individual players, you know, all season we've been talking about how Lafreniere, at least I've been mentioning it, has been a victim of some bad luck. And his luck has been turning around tremendously in these last couple of weeks. I think he's closing in on 30. I don't know, Scott or Glenn, you guys can check the number. I think, is he a 25 goal? I was hoping to see if he, when he got the 20, I was like, can he make a run for 30? And he had that hat trick the other night. So I think he's, if he can close in a little bit and try to get those last few goals to get number, you know, 30 goals, you know, for the folks. And that's what tells you about patience, right? You know, remember last season, folks were saying, you know, hey, he's not delivering right away. He's not microwaving success. We should trade him. Are you crazy? You know, sometimes guys just develop that different.
Who was thinking that, Carl?
I mean, I don't know.
Who was saying that?
Hey, you know, that's just the grapevine. I'm, you know, going on. But, you know, that's just, you know, some guys just develop at different rates, and you just have to kind of accept that. It's like in school. You know, if you go back, think back when you were in grade school, there were some smart kids. There were some kids that, you know, needed a little bit of a little boost. You know, they needed to study for the test. Some kids didn't need to study for the test to get an A's. And then there were people that struggled. Maybe it took them a while for them to eventually, you know, catch up along with the rest of the class. That's how I sort of look at it in this sort of sense. Like, that's the way it goes. You know, now there's some guys on the team now separately that have been very quiet. You know, I know Kreider got his 300th goal on Saturday, but, you know, the last 15, 20 games, not much going on there. Mika, in terms of his play, I'm not totally sure what to make of that right now. Yeah. So, but besides that, everybody else is, you know, picking up the pace. I like watching Wennberg play on that line, being able to give them the depth that they need over there. And as we get to the point now where we kind of start making sure, okay, who is going to be our postseason game one lineup? You can see it kind of coming to fruition right now. And some guys, unfortunately, are going to be left off that may be able to make a case to be in there. But you know what? I think we are not right now. I would say, I think it'd be fair assessment to say, guys, when we go in here, we are not going to go into the postseason feeling as if we are short a player at position X. I feel like we've got a very solid foundation going forward.
Fair enough, man. Fair enough. Shout outs to Carl, man. Listen, I'll chime in and then I'll throw my question at you guys. And I think, like, overall, I mean, this has been a fantastic season. There's only one team that kind of mirrors what we do this year statistically as a team, and that is the Carolina Hurricanes. But, I mean, the Blue Shirts are still number four in penalty kill. I mean, that is fantastic. For, you know, knowing that if you have to, you know, a penalty and you're down one man, you can still sustain at an 83.5% rate. I love the fact that they can still withhold that. The power play is still fourth in the league. So you're top four in power play, top four in penalty kill. You know what I'm saying? Because of Vincent Trocheck, your faceoff is still top five. You're number four in that. Goals allowed, your top 10, you're number 7th in that. Goals per game, you're 7th in that. You're top 10 across the board. That's fantastic, if you ask me. No, there's only one other team in the sport that's that right now, and that's the Carolina Hurricanes, because they seem to pick it up after the first 2 months. Remember, they were struggling. They couldn't get out of their own way, well, you know, with their issues and their injuries, but they picked it up. It's going to come down to me, us and them at some point in the playoffs, but I'm not ready to get to that point until we actually get into the playoffs. But all I'm saying this is to say, you know, the Pittsburgh game is the Pittsburgh game. They have Hall of Famers on that squad, and they're fighting for the playoff lives. So a stinker is kind of allowed, especially after that big win in Colorado, where you beat them twice this season. I mean, there's nothing not to like about that. That team in the Western Conference is trying to chase down Dallas. So, you know, I'm happy. There's no way RP. I avoided Rangers Twitter for like the last couple of weeks. So It does kind of do something to your psyche, bro. It really does. But here's my question for you, RP. If you have anything else you want to say for the the blue shirts. But here's my question for everybody. We'll start with RP, and it goes back to Jonathan Quick, because we know him going to the Hall. He's going to be a Hall of Famer and his legendary career with the Los Angeles Kings. But as a backup goalie, and remember, we had these discussions right before the start of the season, and some Ranger fans, you know, were worried about him dropping off. Well, this guy's a top 10 goalie, you know, maybe not the number of starts as a regular goalie, but as far as his save percentage and wins, this guy's been nothing but a blessing to us in a backup role. But the question for you, RP, and Glenn, I really wanted to get your thoughts. I mean, we could talk about John Van Beesbrook. We could talk about Alexander Gorkyov or Cam Talbot or Glenn Healy. Gilles Villemur backing up Yakimin back in the 70s. Who is the best backup New York Rangers goalie in history? So I will, if you want to give your favorite, fine. If you have whoever is the best, fine, RP. My question to you is that, because since this club has been in existence, since 1926, but the backup goalie, I guess games played or reps, didn't really pick up until another 25 years when they really started dividing the work between two goalies. So who is the best backup goalie? I think I did mention Van Beesbrook, because he's a little weird. He's kind of like a John Smoltz. He was a backup, then he was a starter, then he was a backup. Backup goalie for you on the Rangers, and as well, who's your favorite? And then also anything else you'd like to add on the Rangers, and then we'll go fully around with bringing the rest of the NHL. What are your thoughts on the backup goalie? Who's your favorite? And then also any thoughts you have on the blue shirts right now with the roster?
Oh, my favorite up until currently was Talbot. When he went in, when Lundqvist got hurt with that throat injury, he really carried the team, and I thought he played really well. Gorgiev was a good goaltender, but when he was backup, he didn't play well because he didn't want to be there. So he's doing great now in Colorado. He's proven that he needed to be a starter, but when he was here, you know, and when he became the backup with Shesterkin, and he's back and forth with Hank and all, his unhappiness affected his play on the ice. It got into his head, so I don't put him in that category. I was always a big Cam Talbot fan. I was a big Antti Raanta fan. The Rangers have been very, very lucky with goaltending over the last 20, 25 years, if you really think about it. You know, before Mike Richter, you know, you have Van Beesbrook, at times you had Kevin Weege, you had Steve Ballackhead. You have so many guys that weren't great, who were able to keep the Rangers above water for so long. My thing with how Quick is played is he was a guy that everyone thought, as we said, was on the end of his career, but he didn't think that. I truly believe that he didn't think that, and he came in here and he's been such a positive for the Rangers. You know, the wins and the points he gets, the team plays so well in front of him. He's accepted the role that he is going to be backup to Shesterkin. He knew that coming here, he knew how important every one of his starts was. And you don't see that a lot of players, you know, in his spot will come in, yeah, I'm going to be a backup, I've already got two Stanley Cups, I'm just going to ride this out. He doesn't have that attitude. I mean, look, he's already signed for next season, which I think is great, because there is no goaltending conversation going into next season. It's already set. And, you know, if he can do what he did this year again, the Rangers should be at the same level they are this time next year. So I think Quick, to me, is my favorite backup right now. Mm-hmm. Talbot is pretty close behind them. You know, we can go back. I mean, I'm old like Glenn. I remember Glenn Hanlon. I remember Steve Weeks playing. I remember Eddie Neal playing.
Yep.
You know, and all those guys that, you know, at one time or another really stood out goaltending in New York. You know, and then once Richter came, the whole landscape changed, because then we finally had the guy that was going to be in after for the next 12, 15 years. You know, you went Richter, and then you went Lundqvist, and now you got Shesterkin. And so the Rangers have been blessed. Even though we haven't won, you know, only won one cup, goaltending really hasn't been a major, major issue here. It's been everything else around it. This season, you know, it feels like a team. You know, like Scott was saying before, and Carl was saying, that depth. you know, look how great Jones has done this year. Every time someone went down, that mentality of the next guy stands up, and this goes with the goaltending too. Shesterkin was struggling horribly in January. Horribly. I mean, the whole team did, but he, you know, he struggled at all. And here comes Quick. Oh, I got you back. Don't worry about it. And he put that front up. And even when he played from a fan standpoint, he felt like, we're going to win this game too. You know, you never feel whatever goalie's in net that you don't have a shot to win that hockey game. And the team sees that, and the team feeds off that. And I think that's awesome. You know, if we go into the playoffs and Goff with Shesterkin struggles, I have no problem if he puts Quick in net. He's experienced. He's won 3 cups. He knows what it takes to go win 16 games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You have to be happy with where we are goaltending. I'm happy where we are with the depth. I don't remember a Ranger team as deep as this team is. I mean, you have to question, when Gustafson comes back, does Jones keep that spot? Because I think Jones is playing lights out better than Gustafson right now. He stepped up. He battled all season. And he got the break that our old friend Lieber Hayek didn't get. He got ample playing time because of injuries. And then he proved they deserve to be out there. So, to your question, it's Quick as my favorite.
Wow. Okay.
The depth of this team is just, it's just incredible right now.
All right, now we got one for Jonathan Quick, Glenn. I went Gillis Vermeer. I think he had a fantastic run behind Yakimin in the 70s. But, I mean, like RP said, this is a position that is, like, golden for the Blue Shirts, historically. Who do you got, Glenn, as far as the best NYR backup goalie? Because, you know, starting goalie is totally different than backup goalie. But your thoughts and anything else around, you know, with the Blue Shirts you would like to add. I'm curious, who do you get? You going with Baker, Steve Baker? You going Glenn Healy? You going Jonathan Quick? You going Cam Talbot, Antti Rinta? Who do you got, Glenn?
Yeah, Steve, I'm thinking Gilles Graton. I'm kidding. I go back to Jakubin and Villamure. When I first started watching the Rangers, they were the two goalies. There was clearly no drop-off when Gilles Villamure was in the net rather than Eddie Jakubin. But, you know, I think of them more as almost co-goalies. I'd have to go back and look. I don't know, but I'll bet you if you go back some of those years that Gilles Villamure and Eddie Jakubin played a similar amount of games each season. So I almost see them as co-goalies. Now, remember, they also, one year, I think it was 72, won the Vezina when the Vezina wasn't voted on as it is now, when it was actual statistically the best goals against in the league. And those two guys won it, I think it was in 72. So it's hard to beat that. But I don't want to sound like, you know, the old guy going back to, you know, back in the old days, it was a lot different. You know, I think with Quick, what's different is that this is a Hall of Famer as your backup. You know, Beezer and Richter too. I mean, I think for a lot of those years, they were kind of co-goalies. You know, maybe one would play a little more than the other. They play who was hot, but I think they were almost like co-goalies too. So to call Beezer and call Villamure a true backup, I don't know if he really can. Cam Talbot, I mean, you got to throw him in there because, you know, a couple of times when Henrik Lundqvist got hurt, he came in and played, you know, that one year when Henrik, I don't remember if it was when he got the stick in the throat or when he got the stick in the eye that went through his mask. And Cam Talbot played solid for, you know, a good 2 months, like not just solid. I mean, I think he went like 16-5 or something like that in that period that Henrik was out. So, I mean, Cam Talbot is right up there, but I mean, I hate to have recency bias, but I mean, I got to say Quick, not only because, you know, I thought he was done. I mean, when they signed him, I was like, geez, he was terrible. He was terrible last year. I mean, he had a goals against above 3. He had a save percentage below 9. And I was like, I don't know how this is going to work out. And then if we remember, he had a terrible preseason too. You know, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer as a backup. So, you know, Benoit Allaire got his hands on him. I think he's still got the explosiveness and the reaction that he You know, he was always kind of a reaction goalie. But I think Benoit Allaire has really helped him out a lot. And I'd have to say, in all the years I've been watching, as a true backup goalie, I have just as much confidence when Quick has been in the net as Igor. And, you know, if we think Igor is going to be a Hall of Famer in someday, then you got two Hall of Fame goalies playing for the Rangers right at this point. And that's something that you don't see a lot of teams have. So I would probably give my vote to Jonathan Quick, too.
All right. Shout out to you, Glenn. Thanks for the improv comedy night, man. That was what he said. I thought he was done.
I was like, hey, I'm glad he won another cup. Good for him. But he was terrible. I mean, I couldn't even have him on my fantasy team. He was so bad.
Yeah. Shout out to Glenn, man, on that. You know, we go to Scott, because Scott was ready to boycott the season with Ranger fans outside the garden. Like, how dare you bring in Jonathan Quick? Now look at it, man. You know, top 10 statistically. But Scott, backup goalie for the Blue Shirts. Who do you got? Who's your favorite? And then also anything else you like to add for the Blue Shirts? Then we'll go to Carl. And then after that, rest of the league.
Well, while you guys were doing yours, I was pulling up stats, and I was going to say John Van Beesbrouck, yes, Glenn, doing what he does best, stealing my thunder, did point out that they were actually kind of co-goalies when Richter took over, and I'm actually really surprised. I'm looking up the numbers. 1991, he started 40 games, followed by 45, followed by 48. Yeah. He actually started more than Richter did in 92-93, so you can't really call him a backup. So you know what? I'm going to go outside the box here. I'm going to go with Bob Froese, and not just because he has the best name in goaltending history, but I'm actually looking up his numbers. He was Van Beesbrouck's backup from 86 to 90, and look at these numbers as a backup. 25-14-11, 23-8-11, 26-9-14, and 14-5-7. So a very capable backup to Van Beesbrouck there. And if I remember correctly, I remember I had those the Rangers used to come out with their highlights VHS tape every year. And if I remember correctly, Froese had most of his games on the road. They did kind of a tandem thing in which he was they actually used the term Road War for Bob Froese, because he did most of the road games and Van Beesbrouck did the home games. So those are pretty respectable numbers for a backup in general, let alone when you factor that most of his games were on the road. That's very, very respectable backup numbers. So I'm definitely going to go Bob Froese as my favorite backup since Glenn ruined Van Beesbrouck for me. I guess worthy of pointing out the milestones from the other night after the Arizona game. So obviously,
Quick, or are you talking about Chris Kreider, or are you talking about Lafreniere getting over past 20 at this point? No, I'm just kidding, man. Go ahead.
And Carl, I may have alluded once or twice. I'm not confirming nor denying, but I may or may not have alluded to Lafreniere being a bust and needing to be traded. Possibly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, thank you. And I have issued so many public apologies in the last month, and I've never been happier to have been proven wrong in my life. Because there are some Ranger fans that actually want some of these guys to fail just so they can say, I told you. So, and, you know, RP, I'm sure, you know, always mentioned in Rangers Twitter, I'm sure you've come in contact with a lot of them. But I come into contact with a lot of social media Ranger, quote-unquote Ranger fans, who legitimately want some of these guys to fail just so they can say I told you so and make these posts about it. I am not one of them. I have never been happier in my life to have been proven wrong than by Lafreniere. They're finally emerging as the guy we were hoping and needed him to be, and that line is just straight lethal now. It's beautiful. But, three milestones there. I mean, yes, four if you want to count Lafreniere getting his 5 points. But Quick, obviously, the U.S. record. You had Kreider, 300. You had You had Fox, 300 points, and an interesting stat I saw. He's 300 points in 350 games or less. He's one of only 18 defensemen in NHL history to do that, so that's pretty impressive. And a stat that I saw today, not Rangers-related, but very interesting stat. Jeff Skinner is playing in his 1,000th game tonight and has become the first player in NHL history to play in 1,000 games and never play in a playoff game. You believe that? It's almost mathematically impossible if you think about it, but I immediately looked up his record, and yeah, he got his start with Carolina, you know, in between their, you know, their Stanley Cup run, and when they completely went to crap before they rebuilt to where they are now. They were terrible for a few years. You know, he was one of the standouts there, and then he went to Buffalo, which, you know, explains the rest of it. So, yeah, Jeff Skinner, 1,000 games, no playoff games, and he's not going to get his first this year. So there's the milestones.
Cool. The Ernie Banks of hockey.
Right. Yeah. Let's go to Carl, get his thoughts. NYR, Blue Shirts, backup. Who do you got, Carl? And then also anything you like to add in, and then we go around the rest of the league.
So I did have my vote also for Cam Talbot in that 2014-15 year. I was like, I remember thinking back, I remember there was a time in that season where I was thinking, I was like, boy, you know, if Henrik doesn't come back, I think this Talbot can really kind of just carry the load the rest of the way. And, you know, as I was looking at his numbers from that season, he started 34 games, and his goals against average was 2.21. Henrik's for the season in the 46 games, he played, was 2.25. You know, like that, his season that year was so good. I think he got the Stephen McDonald Extra Effort Award even that season. Like, he was that, you know, that special for that particular season. He's been able to basically parlay that season to the rest of his career. I think he's still goaltending now.
LA.
All these years later, he used that one season to basically, you know, use that as a springboard to the rest of his career. And, you know, shout out to him, you know, for that. So that would have been my number one. I didn't really have a number two. I was trying to think back, but I was like, I didn't really have anybody that would have that came to the lengths of that particular season that Talbot had. And, you know, the Rangers had a couple of years seemed to have a run of backup goaltenders that were, you know, ranging between excellent and just good. Like, it seems like the Rangers have had very few situations where they've had a backup goaltender where he started in the game and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
You know, you watch some of these games throughout the league.
Right.
And, you know, they put a backup in there that night and they're just praying they can get out of the game alive.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been very lucky in that aspect, really, for the last, you know, 10, 12, maybe I'd say about 10, 12 years safely, where at least, in a, you know, even that season, Mackenzie Skapski even played games that particular. I remember he started a game in Buffalo on a Saturday night around, like, St. Patrick's Day. I remember that night. But, you know, it's a benefit. It's something that, you know, you don't take it for granted, because that's part of the reason why, you know, you try to be first place, second place in the standings. You know, those kind of things really kind of, you know, prop you up a little bit. Throughout the league, let me see, Rangers-wise, I think we're good. Just thinking of some other things throughout the league, I saw Austin Matthews the other night is trying to get to 70 goals. I know he's at 62 right now.
62, yep.
And so I'm curious to see if he's going to be able to, you know, to hit that mark. I'm just looking at some of the other teams throughout the league. You know, things have kind of been holding steady. We really don't really have a whole lot of drama in terms of, you know, movement, at least in the standings. You know, night to night, there's, you know, a little thing here, linked, but I feel like we have all of our play, with the exception of the Philly Washington thing. I think we pretty much have our 16 teams set, and really it's just a matter right now of just positioning between now and, you know, the 20th of April. That's pretty much it. We don't really have much drama the rest of the way here.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up right now, because I've been saying to you guys, even right before our break, for weeks, Philadelphia is losing steam. There was no way they were going to survive their march. And they kind of held par to what I thought was going to happen. They have 6 games remaining. They have 83 points. Washington's behind them by 1 point, but they have 9 games remaining. I like Washington's chances over the Flyers. I definitely do. Then you have the Islanders. You have Detroit. Pittsburgh, who got a big win versus us last night, they needed it a lot more. So I would definitely like to get your guys' thoughts on the last one or two spots in the East, basically with those teams. Like you said, Carl, about Austin Matthews, I think even the bigger surprise is Zach Hyman got 52 goals. Like, goddamn. Like, so I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So yeah, I mean, this is some things that are going on. You know, Morgan Riley's back with the Leafs after the suspension, and Ryan Hartman just got the suspension, what, 3 games for throwing his stick at the refs or something like that. And then there's a great story, obviously, everybody should know, especially the hockey fans. You know, Josh Doan, the son of the Mr. Coyote, Shane Doan, his debut with the 2 goals. We ended up playing him in his second game versus the Blue Shirts. But that's a nice story, especially, you know, not a lot of great things going on out of the Arizona Coyote camp with their arena situation. But nonetheless, the father-son connection with that organization. But yeah, RP, anything you like to add from the rest of the NHL? You know, I mentioned, you know, Philadelphia. I don't believe they're going to make it, man. They don't have enough games, and there's the Capitals behind them. You know what I'm saying? Then you got Detroit. The Islanders, don't count them out, with 8 games remaining. What are your thoughts, RP, rest of the league? And then we go right down the line and get final thoughts from everybody after that.
Well, as much as I hate to do this, you got to congratulate Sidney Crosby. 19 seasons consecutive, a point per game player. Only Gretzky has done that. So we may hate him and despise him and call him crybaby Sid, but especially this season when they traded Gunzel and Malkin looks old, and Letang looks old, and the Eric Karlsson thing didn't work out, Crosby's still a point per game guy. It's just incredible. You know, when you think about it in the division that he plays in, you know, you got to give him props. I know as Ranger fans, he's not in our top 500 hockey players. I get that. But from an NHL, from a fan, just looking at what players have done, you know, you see all these milestones, and we've been lucky to see so many great players outside of New York play. It's an incredible stat. It's so hard to do, and it's you talk about consistency. You can't ask more from a loyal player like that. So congrats to him, and that's all I have to say about the Penguins. Back to what you were saying, I agree. As soon as the Flyers lost their goaltender because of that whole sexual assault thing in Canada, I had said right off the bat the Flyers were in trouble, and they're barely holding on. The Capitals are just on fire right now. It's funny because they're second in the wild card. They're 7 points behind Tampa Bay for the first wild card position, but they're 1 point out of third place. So they're going to leapfrog. They're going to go from the second wild card to having home ice advantage in the first round of the playoffs. It's just the way the whole format is a little obscured. But then again, guys, let's look at Boston. 15 overtime losses. They gave them 15 points for losing a game, almost 8 more wins they got for losing a hockey game. And the NHL doesn't have a problem with the overtime standing situation. They just had a whole meeting about it. They don't want to change to 3-on-3. They don't want to change to force the teams to attack and not keep backing up for that one perfect play. I don't understand it. The Islanders are in the same spot. The Islanders have 15 overtime losses. They shouldn't even be in the conversation for a wild card game. So, it's a travesty. It's horrible. Why keep awarding teams to lose hockey games? And it also makes it hard for teams chasing wild cards because you can keep getting points even though you lose. So it's hard to leapfrog if you have, you know, 3 teams in front of you because they can lose in overtime and still keep getting points. So it's been my pet peeve for a while now, and it's going on, but that's neither here nor there. Really quick, the Edmonton Oilers just playing great hockey since they hired Knobloch. They're up to second place, only 5 points behind the Canucks with 73 games played. They even have a game in hand on Vancouver, so they're playing well, even though Connor McDavid became an assist guy and not a goal scorer all of a sudden. You got to love what you're seeing out over there. And the Los Angeles Kings, we were just talking about them with Cam Talbot playing goal for them, are in the second wild card spot, 3 points out of the first wild card spot, and a 3-point lead over St. Louis. So there's a lot of exciting hockey going down to these last 7-8 games that teams have. it's Night City on the other side. The Rangers really are on the bubble, and we're just talking about, are you going to come in first place or second place, win a President's Trophy or not? But either way, we're in the playoffs, so you can focus on the more important stuff and stay healthy. So great battles up and down all around the NHL. It's a great time of season.
Ooh, let's get to Glenn. Glenn, your thoughts around the rest of the NHL. Same thing for Scott after that, and then Carl, then we're going to go to final thoughts. But go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, I mean, quickly what RP was saying about the overtime losses. I mean, or overtime, you know, losses, I guess. I mean, I look at them as losses. I mean, you look at Boston. Boston is 43-32, if you count those. 43-32. Florida is 47-28, and they're in second place. The same thing with the Islanders and even the Flyers. I mean, the Flyers are 36-40, counting the overtime losses. And the Islanders are 32-42. If you count the overtime losses, but they're still having a chance to get into the playoffs. That's a conversation for over the summer, maybe, guys. But I would really like to see the NHL do something. I wasn't necessarily in favor of the 3-2-1 points, but, you know, and I understand the logic. You want to keep as many teams involved in the playoff hunt as possible. But, you know, we've seen the Rangers a lot of years where they're fighting to try and leapfrog teams or get into the playoffs, and these teams keep tying, and you know, you just can't make any ground. It's very frustrating. So maybe we can shelf that for the summer. As far as the rest of the league, I mean, we saw Colorado a couple of times in the last month. They're damn good. They're fast. They're getting great goaltending from Georgiev. I know they're 3 points behind Dallas right now, even in games. But, you know, the one team that I want to mention out west, and again, as I did with Tampa, having that championship caliber, the Vegas Golden Knights are on a bit of a run. And they were not too long ago on the verge of, you know, right on the border of maybe not making the playoffs even. But they're on a 7-2-1 run right now. They're probably not going to catch Edmonton, but they're pretty firmly in third place in the Pacific Division. And those are two teams that, you know, I put a lot of stock in teams that have won cups and have guys on their team that have won cups. And I would look for either of those teams, Tampa or Vegas, to possibly pull off a stunning upset in the first round. Last thing I want to do is Scott mentioned that I'm always stealing his thunder, so I want to give him some thunder. you know, he was a noted Chris Kreider critic for a number of years, and next thing you know, he scores 52 goals. He's a 40-goal scorer. You know, he's doing great. Same thing with Lafreniere. You know, he put his claws into him, and now I think the kid has really turned the corner. In fact, I read he was the third star of the week in the NHL last week, and I think he's really turned the corner. So I'm hoping that Scott can sink his claws into maybe Kako or somebody else, because Scott is a kingmaker. you know, as long as he puts a focus on somebody, as soon as he does that, might take a little while, but the guy turns around and turns into what we always thought he would be. So I'm interested to see who the spotlight is going to go on with Scott, and maybe he could turn somebody else around in the near future for the playoffs. Scott, there's your thunder. You deserve it.
Yeah, let's go to Scott. It's got to be Kapo Kako, but let's go to Scott and get his thoughts. around the rest of the NHL, yes. Too.
Well, thank you for that. And I'd also like to add that I think my same level of fury successfully got the former Maryland basketball and football coaches fired. I'd like to think that I had something to do with that. Unfortunately, I think they were both replaced with people worse, but I'm working on them now. so yes, Kako is definitely the next target for me. But I've been a big proponent of getting rid of the participation trophy point, as I like to call it, because yes, it ruins the sanctity of these pennant races down the stretch. You know, if you could be 5 points back at this point with three teams in front of you, and it's an insurmountable hill because, you know, like everybody's been saying, you know, the teams ahead of you are going to get points for losing. And I do the same thing with the standings. You know, they might be separated in the standings just, you know, for points purposes, but that doesn't mean you didn't lose them. But I got into it with an Islander fan a couple weeks ago. I got a good friend of mine who's an Islander fan. He's a good guy. But, you know, he'll post something when they win, and I'll troll him, and I'll say, like, hey, congratulations. You're only nine games back of 500 now. And I started to get attacked. They're like, what are you talking about? I don't know what the numbers were, but, you know, we're four games over 500. I'm like, no. I'm like, you're nine games under 500. And you're just back and forth, just simple math that they can't do. They're like, those don't count as losses. I'm like, so you're saying 15 games that you lost, you didn't actually lose? I'm pretty sure you did. Trying to explain to them that it's separated the standings just for point status. It doesn't mean to lose the game anyway. So, yes, I'm all in favor of getting rid of those points. And, you know, I mentioned the origins. We all know the origins of of that point. Remember, they started it in 99 when overtime was 5-on-5 and, what, 98% of all regular season games after regulation ended in a tie. So they knocked it down to 4-on-4 and added the loser's point to get teams to not play conservatively and go for it, which was a good strategy at the time. That's fine. But now you made it 3-on-3. Now you don't need the point because you cannot play. If you take away that loser's point, you cannot possibly play conservatively in 3-on-3. It's not possible. You can't play for the tie. You could stack three guys in front of the net, and then it's just going to be a shooting gallery for the other team from 5 feet out. There's no way you could possibly play for the tie in 3-on-3. You can't do it. So getting rid of the loser's point will not change the gameplay. It will not make teams somehow adapt to try and play for that point. It's just not, if you're going to, you know, make it a tie at the end or whatever you're going to do. But you don't need the loser's point anymore. And it's ruining the sanctity of these pennant races down the stretch, these playoff races, because it's so hard to make up ground when you got teams in front of you losing and getting rewarded in the standings. It's ridiculous. And yeah, I saw that they were talking about it, but it never made it to the competition committee. So I guess the competition committee is just as credible as the player safety committee it needs an overhaul. They got to get rid of it. It's ruining the game. It really is. Cause these playoff races, these last 10 games or so down the stretch, and are so exciting. It's great to not be a part of it. It really is. It's great to look down at the standings, do a little scoreboard watching, because we all want the Islanders and Devils to fall apart. I was looking at those scores tonight. It looks like the Devils are probably going to win. They're going to beat Pittsburgh, but we are getting some help from the Blackhawks. Blackhawks up 1-0 on the Islanders in the third, and Montreal was down 2-1 to Florida. They're now up 3-2, which is nice. And the Capitals were down 3-1 to Buffalo, and they've cut it to 3-2. So, and then the other game we care about is Boston. Last time I checked, Boston and Nashville were scoreless after one. So let's see how those shape up. I think we probably have to deal with the reality that one of the two, Islanders or Devils, I think is going to make it. Washington was hot. Now they seem to be cooling off at the wrong time. I don't know what's up with Detroit. You know, the wheels had fallen off. Now they're winning a couple games. The good news for them is that if they are stopping the bleeding and turning it back around, they've done it just in time. But the question is, can they get back to what they were? They were terrible for the past 3 weeks or whatever it was. So, but they're still mathematically definitely right in the mix there. If they could put a few wins together and get back to what they were. But okay. I forgot who mentioned it earlier. Nobody.
Go ahead. Finish
up. I'm done again.
Finish your last point. Finish your last point. Finish your last point real quick. Because we
I was just going to say, like somebody else said earlier, I forgot who, it's like nobody wants that last playoff spot. So, nobody can put together a solid ring and really like say, I want it, it's mine. Everybody's just winning one game, losing two. It's hilarious, really.
Gotcha. Carl, your thoughts? And then we got to go on a quick round table on the final thoughts. But Carl, your thoughts, rest of the show.
Yeah, on the overtime thing, if especially late in the season, if you need some of the points to be able to come up, you know, that's why it happened again, actually. Minnesota, I don't know if you guys had caught this. A couple weeks ago, they had tried this in overtime where they were going to forego a potential win, or a potential point, because yes, the game went into overtime. And they brought in the extra attacker in overtime. They scored a couple weeks ago. They tried the same thing again. I think it was either Friday. It was a Saturday game, I think. I think it was Saturday, yeah. Yeah, they tried it this time. It didn't work. And so they ended up
losing the point.
Yeah, so you get no points out of it.
That's right.
I mean, I don't know how you correct that. It's a very tricky, you know, probably tricky thing to see. You know, I know that they're trying to keep everybody involved. That's the idea, but there is some unintended consequences of it as well. You know, one thing I know that had been discussed, I'd seen it in a couple different places, was the potential of a play-in tournament for the wild card teams. Now, I'm actually for that, but of course, if you this year, unlike past years, like, you've got some really mediocre teams here that are, you know, competing for these wild cards in both leagues. So maybe it's just an anomaly. But, you know, if you want to do that, I'm for, personally, for the postseason, the 1-8 format. I am not a fan of basically having your playoff opponent kind of dictated by late November. And in some cases, that's kind of, if you scan around some of these standings, like, that's kind of how it's been the whole way. And that's a good way to do playoff business. That, you know, they've been talking, you know, the whole discussion is, oh, you want to create division rivalries. Well, maybe Scott might know this. I don't believe the last time, let's just use the Rangers and the Islanders for this hypothetical scenario. I don't believe the Rangers have played a game at UBS Arena since like November of 2022. I believe I'm correct on that. It's some long period of time. And Pittsburgh just came in for the first time all season. So if the whole division thing is, that's not a point that you can use anymore. So if that's the case, then why are we playing divisional playoff, you know, division matchups in the postseason? It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense anymore. So that's just kind of how I look at it.
Cool. All right. Hey guys, let's wrap it up. 30 seconds for everybody. We'll start with Glenn, Scott, Carl, then go to RP. 30 to 60 seconds. Glenn, your final thoughts. Our squad or the rest of the league, and then go to Scott, Carl, RP, and then we'll wrap up. Go ahead, Glenn.
Thank you very much, guys. Again, with the Rangers, I think they got to use these last eight games to, you know, the lines are pretty well set, but I think they need to, concentrate more on some of their structure. You know, the thing about, you know, that I said with the defense and giving up goals and everything, nobody who came in, even though we had, you know, Lindgren out for a little while and Trouba out for a couple of weeks, Gustafson, you know, we were plugging and playing guys. I don't think anybody particularly played bad. I mean, Zach Jones, I think, has been terrific, and he may have solidified a spot even after Gustafson comes back. I'd love to see him put on maybe 10 or 15 pounds over the summer without affecting his speed. I might see him a little bit bigger, but I thought Ruedel came in and did a solid job, which, you know, we thought he would. I just want to see them tighten up the defense. Giving up the goals that they gave up, we're not all the fault of the goalies. So I want to just see them these last seven games of the season kind of refocus on structure and playing the way they have during these great stretches that they had and going to the playoffs flying.
Fantastic, man. Thank you, Glenn. Scott, same thing, 30 to 60 seconds, final thoughts. And then Carl, same thing.
Yeah, I agree there. Defense, you know, the good news is everybody's back, and Laviolette now has some options as far as what he wants to do. Gustafson has been great, but I think I agree there. Zach Jones has played his way into, should be above him on the depth chart now, but we do have plenty of depth now, which is great. Carl, you mentioned you know Zibanejad had the big question mark this year. Yeah, he hasn't had a great year. I think he's going to finish around 80 points or so. Obviously, more noticeable on the power play, but I think that line it got a major, you know, shot of roids, so to speak, hypothetical roids, so to speak, proverbial, that's the word I'm looking for, with getting Kakko off there. And I think it's been better for Kakko, too. I think he's been better. You know, first of all, Roslovich has just that night, that line is just night and day now, and Zibanejad has definitely improved. He's still not where we want. I agree there. He's still not where we want him, but he's definitely improved. And I think that's been very good for Kakko, too, because I think the pressure, you know,
the plane, Scott. Got to land the plane, Scott. Let's go, man.
I'm done. Okay. Okay. Defense. Defense.
Okay, cool, man. Thanks. Carl, final thoughts. Then RP.
Let's just finish the season out well, and I'm willing to forego the first place in standings for health if it comes down to it. That would be my preference, the way this, you know, shakes out towards the end of the season.
All right, cool, man. Shout-outs to Carl. Thank you very much. Of course, RP, anything you got, your writings, anything coming down the pike, and then as well as your final thoughts with Blue Shirts and or anything else like that, man.
Well, Ranger prospect Gabriel Perreault playing in the Frozen Four. Be sure you guys watch out. He's having a great year with Boston. Mm-hmm. We've said everything there is to say about the Rangers. Stay healthy. Don't worry about where you finish. Just finish the best that you can and then take care of business in the playoffs. Really quick with the overtime, the goalie's the one that gets screwed the most because they just get a loss. Mm. There is no overtime goalie loss. So I'm sure they would be happy if they revamped some sort of format and system to make things better. Keep following me on Empire Sports Media. Keep following me on Inside the Rink. And a big shout out to my daughter, Alyssa, who's going to be interning this semester at Inside the Rink.
Nice.
And she gets credentialed before me, I'm gonna get really pissed. That's for another day. But it's always great talking with you guys. I look forward to the playoff talk that's be coming up. It should be a lot of fun. So keep following us here on Blue Blue. And thanks, Steve. You guys have a great night.
And thanks, everybody. Sorry for the phone systems. Not my fault. That is the host. And hopefully they get those squared away when we come back next Tuesday. Shout outs to Glenn Scott, Carl, RP, myself, Steve. A lot of good talk on the Blue Shirts and the rest of the league. This show will be available, of course, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. We'll be back next Tuesday and get into some playoff hockey mode this April and May, man. All right, guys. Sangre su, ladies and gentlemen. Bleed blue.